The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Thank you to Pastor Chris Connell for filling in for me on Friday. I want to introduce you to a couple people. First, this is a name that you probably have never heard, unless perhaps you grew up in Arkansas or lived in Arkansas in the late 60s, early 70s. Paul Holderfield Sr., better known as Brother Paul, was not somebody that you would have expected for a good part of his life to do what he ended up doing and what the Lord did in his life. And he came from a broken home and poverty. His father had all kinds of messes. He had all kinds of messes personally and probably mostly as a result of that. And growing up, obviously, in the 1950s and 1960s in the South, the racial issue was a big deal, and he struggled with that too. But then eventually you find out, and this is just a wild story, eventually you find out, you look it up. So you just go Google Paul Holderfield Sr. And the first thing that comes up is Friendly Chapel Church of Nazarene in North Little Rock. And then you go there and you find this is a racially integrated church. It has been since day one. And it's run now by Paul Holderfield Jr., who's the son, obviously, of Paul Holderfield Sr. And then to find out that the senior dad struggle with racism, struggle with alcohol, struggle with all kinds of things, that had no interest in the Lord. And then all of a sudden, boom, then he ends up starting Friendly Chapel. Now his kids still are involved in the ministry. They've given out millions of meals down there. It's really an amazing story. The only reason I found that out is because I was asked to consider doing an interview with the folks behind Paul's Promise, which is opening theaters nationwide October 21st. And that's what it's about. It's all about Paul Holderfield Sr. And it's an amazing story. So I kind of worked my way backwards. And literally about 40 minutes ago, I finished watching a screener of it. That's one of the beauties of doing what I do. You get access to movies and stuff, which is cool. But Ryan O'Quinn is the producer and the star of Paul's Promise. And we jumped on Zoom today, and he was wondering if I had composed myself, because especially towards the end, it turns into a real tearjerker. I didn't really see that one coming. So we're going to talk about this today. Excited to have you on, Ryan, and to share all this stuff with everybody. But it's great to see you. It's great to meet you. And when I was looking at your own background, all the way back to 90210, which I'm like, yes, I used to watch that show. Welcome to the show. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on, Steve. Yeah, my career spans all the way back to 90210. And I have to say, for the younger audiences, the original 90210,
yes,
because they did a reboot a while back. And
thumbs down, boo, hiss.
I have to tell you, I was doing a comedy show a few years ago, and inevitably, you know, people will introduce me as a guy who was on that show years ago, and they mentioned 90210, and this gaggle of I think that's what you call a group of eighth grade girls. This gaggle of eighth grade girls, you know, middle school girls, came running up to our table afterwards, and one of them said, "Which one of you were on Beverly Hills 90210?" And of course, my head got that big around because I did a few episodes, you know, and I said to the guy that was traveling with me, "I've got this one." So I leaned forward and I said, "As a matter of fact, young lady, that was me." And without missing a beat, she said, "When my mommy was a little girl, she loved that show."
Oh, man, like, there it is. Dagger right there.
There it is. Just in the love of Jesus, let me, you know, bless your heart. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, so it goes all the way back. In getting started all the way back then, but parallel that, and then obviously we want to talk about Paul's Promise. And again, everybody, that's opening October 21st. PaulsPromiseMovie.com is the website. But parallel for us, just for a minute, if you would be so kind, Ryan, kind of your walk through movies and television in the crazy world of Hollywood, and then your faith journey.
Yeah, well, you know, 25 years ago, I came to by the way, I'm in L.A. now. That's where my production company is and where we are right now. The name of our company is Damascus Road Productions, which to your audience, they will get that and sort of speaks volumes. But, you know, I had some semblance of an idea that I should be in this business. And I had in undergrad, I did a lot of live stage, and I toyed with the idea of live theater in New York. You know, New York's the place you have to be, you know, for live theater. But for film and television, I felt like that was my calling. I'm using air quotes here, calling. And I felt like there was something that the Lord had for me in this business. To be fully transparent, I toyed with the idea of vocational ministry. I thought about seminary. I thought there was something, some sort of messaging that I was to give to proliferate the gospel message. And I believe Matthew 28 is very specific, and we all have a job to do. And that, and our vocation often differs from our occupation. Our occupation is how we put food on the table. It's what's on our tax returns. Our vocation, if you're a believer, is to spread the good news. Mm-hmm. And that could be in the form of certainly a vocational pastor, but a teacher or a bus driver or a lawyer or a banker or a radio host or an actor. You know, we still have the same vocation if we are a believer. So 25 years ago, I loaded up my little red car and drove cross country from wow. Virginia, ended up in Los Angeles, and started down that path of, in as much as I can, let me figure out how best to take these God-given talents that I've been given and utilize that for the kingdom. And by the way, you alluded to it, but not easy to do. You know, you even mentioned 90210. So a lot of secular film and television, and just trying to chart that path of where am I supposed to be in the midst of all that? And then there was about a 10-year period where, although I still lived in L.A., I was traveling around the country doing stand-up and improv comedy ministry. I know that may sound a bit oxymoronic, but I did comedy ministry, and I traveled all over the country doing large platform, primarily youth events, and all over the place with a company I co-founded called Team Wordplay. And so we did large platform denominational gatherings and youth conferences and large platform music events. And then that led me into television, film and television production through my own company called Damascus Road, and through a number of factors led us to this movie.
Yeah. And so how did, and we're coming up on a break, so just 30 seconds real quick. Ryan, how did the story of Paul Holderfield get on your radar screen?
Yeah, we have a great executive producer named Nick Logan, who lives in Southwest Virginia, and he was familiar with the story and had encountered the book Brother Paul, which the Nazarene Church has a publishing arm, and Paul Holderfield Sr. had co-authored a book about his life. And so it ended up on Nick's plate, and he came to us and said, we have to make this project.
Yeah, it's such a powerful movie. We're talking to Ryan O'Quinn, who's the producer and plays Paul Holderfield in the movie Paul's Promise. PaulsPromiseMovie.com. We're going to get into the story itself and the making of the film and all that the Lord has done, and praying what the Lord will do as we get closer to October 21st. Ryan O'Quinn, producer and star of Paul's Promise. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Hopefully, every one of you has a story about what the Lord did and coming into your life and moving the way he did, and you coming to faith, and then what happens as a result of that transformation is a great story. Whether it's a huge story and anybody knows it, it all brings glory to God, and every conversion, every person that chooses to follow after the Lord is a great testimony. And every once in a while, you run across one that is inspiring and convicting, especially in the context of where we are today in this country, with race being a big issue. It has been, obviously, since the start of this nation. You can go back to the 1600s. I teach U.S. history. We can go back to the 1400s. You go back. We've been doing it to each other since we got kicked out of the garden. Okay, so you got all these issues that are out there. But the issue of race in particular is a hot button issue, and it's totally politicized, but we have to engage that with a gospel heart. And that's what happens in a movie that's opening nationwide October 21st called Paul's Promise, PaulsPromiseMovie.com. It's the true story behind the conversion of one Paul Holderfield, who was in Arkansas, and race is a big part. This was 1967 is the setting of the movie. Arkansas was a segregated place, but what happens when you bring the gospel into race relations? That's really the ultimate answer. It's not the White House. It's not some program in schools. It's the gospel itself. himself. And so in Paul's promise, you see that. You see the kind of the convergence of the gospel in one man's life and other people's lives and the power of prayer, like Paul's mom. It's just an incredible story. It's opening October 21st. And like I said earlier, I finished watching it about an hour ago. I got the tears out of my eyes. I jumped in my car and I drove here to the studio to talk to Ryan O'Quinn today, who's the producer and the star of Paul's Promise. And Ryan, again, thanks for your time today. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to see that your eyes are not moist. I'm not going to give anything away, but like you said, at the end of the film, it's a bit of a tearjerker, but in a good way, in a great way.
In a great way, yes, as you can glorify the Lord and all of that. So you adapt from the book. It's a true story of Paul Holderfield. But how did you kind of prep yourself since you played Paul? You're a believer. You have your own conversion story. But how do you get yourself ready to play somebody that went through such a large conversion, especially in such a trying time in this country?
Yeah, well, again, I'm for your audience, I'm kind of showing you some of inside baseball, but I was not originally slated to play Paul Holderfield. Before the casting process began, Nick Logan and his team at Salt Shaker Media brought the project to us and said, hey, how can we work together, alongside producer Mike Davis at Uptone Pictures in North Carolina, and how can we work together to bring this story to the screen? So as we started really diving in and unpacking what we had on our hands here, taking a look at the original book and how we could translate that into a feature, my wife said, you do know, and I read the book as well and the original screenplay, and strangely enough, Paul's relationship with his mother very closely resembled my father's relationship with his mother. So my grandmother, not unlike Minnie Holderfield in the movie, was a praying mom who just every day of her life prayed for her son and prayed that he would take a look at this Jesus thing. And so in a weird way, unbeknownst, by the way, to any of the other executive producers, and really no one but my wife really knows the full story of that, but until now, of course. But Heather said, you know, this is kind of like your dad and your grandmother. And again, unbeknownst to any of the producers, Nick Logan reached out to my wife, of all people, not to me, didn't go to me or nor my agents, nor my managers or anybody like that, and said, hey, what would you think about Ryan looking at this role? And so Heather, sort of stepping in the gap as my conduit said, you know, that is a great idea. Yeah. Here's some reasons why. So again, just sort of sneak peek behind the scenes a bit. But as I looked at that role and really tried to tackle that and unpack that, and as you aptly mentioned, you know, the timing of this film in race relations, albeit 55 years in the past, arguably we're going through the exact same thing today. So really looking at how to structure a screenplay start to finish and also honor this man's life, who, like you said, by his own admission, was a bigot, a racist, a ne'er-do-well. He was in with the wrong crowd. He kind of had a fascinating arc in that early on, his childhood best friend was black, and he was raised poor, the son of a sharecropper, as was his best friend, and had a best friend who was black, and they shared a number of things together, including the love of the sport of boxing, and they were just, you know, thick as thieves until, as you know, life often dictates, you fall in with the wrong crowd, you start hearing from others speaking into your life. And in the height, the zeitgeist of the civil rights movement of the 1960s, it was just not cool for those two to be seen together. And so Paul really, literally and figuratively, turned his back on his best friend. And kind of the climax of that, we don't show it in the movie. We take creative license and kind of condense it all into a short period of time. But the real story, Steve, is during the Little Rock Nine incident in 1957, Paul was approached by Jimmy Lipkin, his childhood best friend, by the way, who's played with aplomb by the actor Joseph Cannon.
Yeah, he was
an amazing
great.
Job.
Yeah, he was great.
He won a number of awards. But he was approached by Jimmy Lipkin, and Paul stuck his hands in his back pocket, and at risk of having his friends, I'm using air quotes, see him shake the hand of a black man, he really turned his back on him. And that stuck with Paul. And he went home, he says, that night and cried to his wife and basically said never again. And then ultimately, when the Lord got hold of his life, he really made a point of standing up to the injustice that he saw around him, really becoming an amazing servant of the Lord, and said, racism is not biblical and essentially not on my watch. Let's do something about this.
Yeah, it's so powerful, which is kind of, to quote Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. which continues to this day. I mean, you're talking about a movie set back in 1967, and his family to this day has a racially integrated church and a ministry, and they're reaching out to the people in the area and poor people. It's really an amazing story. It's a great cast, and of course, Dean Cain, most of us remember Dean going back to Superman days, and Sherry, it's Weedman now, but it's Sherry Riggs, which a lot of people would recognize her. I thought it was really, I'm looking at Linda Pearl and Nancy Stafford. I'm going, okay, I know these women. And were they both on Matlock? Together?
They were both on Matlock. They actually they were on the same show, but they never worked at the same time.
Wow.
So when Nancy left the show, Linda came onto the show. And so our movie was a bit of a reunion sort of for both of them. They had known of each other and they both did an amazing job. Linda, by the way, last night won Best Actress at the Canadian International Film
Festival. Oh, did she really?
Festival.
Wow. Cool.
And then our film a couple nights ago won a number of awards here at the Red Letter Awards here in Los Angeles.
That's
but yes, again, tip of the hat to our cast, which was just incredible, and Matt Reitmeier, our director, who was at the helm and expertly, you know, took the lead to pull this all together. Dean, of course, is fantastic as always.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Did an amazing job as well.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about casting. We got about a minute before we run out of time again, but we'll continue on the other side of the break. So obviously, you know, there's casting and there's all the talent that's out there. But when you're making a faith-based film, do you have like the casting book part two? Like it's the secret one on the shelf. Like here's all the believers. How do you cast a film that's obviously faith-driven and pointing people to Christ?
Yeah, well, step one is to get great actors. That's always step one. And, you know, as wearing the producer hat as well, it's not lost on us that at a time exactly like this, there's going to be opportunity and reason for those people to be promoting the film and to be in front of folks like you and to, you know, talking about the movie. So, you know, we honestly look at what will that be like? What will that be like on the day? And when they're on the Steve Noble Show, what will those actors be able to bring to the table? So, you know, at risk of revealing trade secrets, that's also
We'll stop right there. We're up against the break anyway. We're talking to Ryan O'Quinn, producer and star of Paul's Promise. We're going to keep talking about that when we come back. Some more about the story itself. PaulsPromiseMovie.com. Open. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Today, spending some time with our brother in Christ, Ryan O'Quinn, who's the producer and star of Paul's Promise. PaulsPromiseMovie.com, opening October 21st. True story about Paul Holderfield's life. Paul Holderfield Sr., and then his son actually runs the church and the ministry that Paul started. Paul was an unlikely person. He would not have been in the yearbook in high school, most likely to start a church and grow a ministry. And be integrated. He struggled with all those things back in the context of the 50s and 60s, growing up in poverty. Super powerful movie, and Ryan O'Quinn is the producer and also the star, plays Paul Holderfield himself. You said something earlier, Ryan. Again, thanks for your time. You said something earlier, and I've had conversations with people because I've done a lot of Christian movie stuff on the radio show over the years because I'm a huge movie fan myself. And people, the assumption that, hey, let's go hire a bunch of Christians and make all these movies. But you hire the best people in order to produce the best product because that's an offering to the Lord. So you want the best talent you can have. But that provides a great opportunity because you're spent. How long does it take to make a movie like Paul's Promise?
Yeah, this was about 4 weeks of principal photography and about, you know, a year of development before that. So we're boots on the ground about a month before that. So about 2 months on the ground, and you've got another 4 to 6 months of post-production and probably, you know, six to 12 months of pre-production and development. So
and
a good full year from start to finish.
And then everybody, once you're filming, is kind of poured into this one spot. And everybody's on top of each other. I mean, I've been around enough of them now. I'm like, do you guys get along? Because everybody's on, there's so many moving parts. But what a great opportunity to just love people where they're at. And I'm sure over all these years, you've seen God be faithful in those things over and over again.
Oh, for sure. And there's an old adage in the film business, you know, when you're in the midst of shooting a movie, you're in the foxhole, right? You're in the trenches.
Right.
And for better or worse, you're spending every waking minute with these folks around you. And everybody has one, you know, goal in mind and one mission. And a lot of times, you know, you're at odds with people. It's not unlike you would be with any other, you know, any other work setting. But I would say that, you know, 12 to 14 hour work days and the pressure and millions of dollars sometimes on the line. And you know, that adds fuel to the fire. So But you're absolutely right. You know, we don't set out to hire Christian people to make movies. And I think that is somewhat antithetical to the mission of what we're called to do. We hire people to make movies, and best case scenario, at some point, you know, between takes, somebody may say, "Hey, tell me more about this," or in the script, it says ... You know, how do I find out more about that? And I could tell you stories all day long about the last, you know, 20 or so years in the business where I've had opportunity time and again. And maybe that is exactly the reason that I was called to this business, not necessarily to, you know, to put butts in seats at a movie theater, but to have those one-on-one conversations behind the scenes.
Yeah, wouldn't that be an interesting conversation to have with the Lord? And he goes, "Okay, I'm going to have you, Ryan, you're going to make movies. And people are going to see the movies, but I'm actually not that interested in the people seeing the movies. I'm interested in the people that you're using to make the movie. So don't worry about the audience in the end." Of course, God spans both places. But when people just ask generally, because I want to back up because I'm sure there's people just joining the show. When people say, "What's Paul's promise about?" What's the elevator explanation there?
Yeah, well, Paul, it's an incredible true story of a guy who, by his own admission, was not a good guy. He was a racist and a bigot, you know, in the height of the civil rights movement of the 60s, and promised his mother on what was essentially her deathbed. He made a promise to his mom, who was devout and prayed for him his whole life and really wanted him to take a look at her faith, her Christian faith. And so he said, finally, you know, sort of as a last result to his mom, "Okay, I will take a look at this Jesus thing." And when he did, it made all the difference. He made a complete 180 in his life. He practically overnight dropped all of his vices, and he really started loving on people in the inner city of North Little Rock, Arkansas. That was kind of the first phase of his conversion. Was, "All right, let me find some people that I just want to love on people." And it started with kids, and he started a homeless shelter and a food pantry in Little Rock, and that sort of spawned into it actually led to a church. And some of the folks that were with him on this mission said, "Hey, why don't we start a church? And why don't you be the pastor of a church?" And he was the first one to say, "Absolutely not. I'm just new to this faith. I've barely read the whole thing, and I've never gone to seminary, and I'm the last person on the planet that should be doing this." But he did, thank goodness, and the church still exists today. He was among the first to start a truly integrated church in Little Rock, Arkansas. He had a black man preach from the pulpit, one of the first times that had happened in an integrated church. And so he was really a visionary and a man ahead of his time, for sure, in the height of that movement. And then part of our story, you know, it is taken from his real story, wherein he later in life reconnects with his childhood best friend, Jimmy Lipkin, who he had, as I mentioned earlier, literally and physically turned his back on. And he and Jimmy reunited and reconnected, and he had Jimmy speak and preach from the pulpit, and they continue to this day. That church preaches a message of unity and reunification and you know, really true bonds in the Lord. And he said, among other things, "Now that I've read this book, I can see that it's not biblical." And you know, he sought, and his family still seeks, to eradicate racism and discrimination in all forms from their churches.
Real powerful. When you're making a true story like this, and you've got, and Paul Sr. is with the Lord now, right? He's no longer.
He is. Passed away in 98.
So he's out of here. He got promoted. But exactly. You've got his son and his kids and family still involved. So what's that like to make a movie when you're actually telling somebody else's story and his own family's still around to kind of go, hey, Ryan, knock, knock, knock.
Great question indeed. And I was on the phone with him this morning, as a matter of fact. So we took great pains. Producer Mike Davis and Jason Davis, another one of our producers, and I went to the family in Little Rock and spent time with them and really walked them through what it is we wanted to do and how we wanted to do this, and really spent time with Paul Jr., as you mentioned, who's the current senior pastor of that church, and Paula and Philip. Paul Sr.'s other two kids are actively involved in vocational ministry at the church. And so we sat down with the entire extended family for a long time, I mean, over the course of multiple days, and laid out for them how we wanted to approach this, what we were doing, what the goal was. We wanted them to be comfortable with us as storytellers and vice versa. We didn't want to misstep. We also invited them to the set. And so Paul Jr. and his wife Kathy and several people from Friendly Chapel Church and a lot of the folks that were so close to Paul Sr. came both to our set in New Mexico and to our set here in Los Angeles and spent time and really, you know, had I even said, hey, let me get the gait down, let me get the walk, yeah, really dive into let me put on this character of Paul. And I had his son, who was, you know, an amazing resource, needless to say, walk me through those nuances. Wow. And Sherry Rigby had Paul's junior talk about the mom and how she would stand and what she would talk and what her cadence was, and let us listen to those accents and let us, as best we can, emulate both the spirit and the physicality of what your parents were about. So
yeah,
it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's so powerful. So what, I'll combine this last question into two parts. What was their hope? What do they hope everybody gets out of this, the story of their father's conversion and their grandmother's role and all of that? And then what's your hope and prayer, Ryan, for Paul's promise?
You know, I think it's one and the same. The Holderfield family is the least selfish people I've ever met on the planet, as witnessed by their ministry that still goes strong today. You know, nobody's ever paid a dime for food or for shelter or for clothing or anything at all that they have that they offer at their church. And they really just want to proliferate the message, not of one man, not of one man's story. And they would be the first to tell you that, despite the title, this is not about Paul Holderfield. Yeah. This is about a man who made a decision to come into a real relationship with a living God, and as a result, changed his own life and his entire community because of it. And that would be our hope as well. You know, on behalf of all the producers and our whole, and we talked about this regularly, continue to do so, even as we are in the midst of the marketing machine that it takes to get a movie out in theaters around the country, our whole goal and prayer, literally, is exactly that. Let the people who need to see this movie and hear the message of the movie be the people that come. And we're not going to elevate one person or one company or one studio or anything like that. The message is what's important.
Yeah, and then for us as audience members, we need to realize it's just another tool that the Lord gives us to take somebody, a marginal believer, an unbeliever, somebody that's hostile, whatever the case may be, just invite them out to the movies and take them. But you have to continue that conversation. I think oftentimes you say, well, I hope the movie's going to close the deal or whatever. And of course, that's not the way it works. You can't even do that yourself. Ryan, you can't do it. I can't do it. None of us can do it. But it does have the potential to plow a field and start a conversation.
For sure. And that's another reason, Steve, that I like the idea of biopics. You know, we've seen great precedents before us, like what John and Andy did with I Can Only Imagine and I Still Believe. And you can argue with someone's faith. You and I could spend all day long hopping on social media and yelling in all caps at somebody and arguing about faith. What you can't argue with is somebody's true story.
That's right.
And in this case, it's the real true story of Paul Holderfield. And in my opinion, that, you know, thinking again in theatrical marketing terms, that broadens your shotgun scatter of a marketing demographic to bring friends to see this movie because it's a real story about a real guy.
That's right. And then a call to action for all of us, just so you understand this. The first weekend is immensely important. You have to come out the first weekend. You don't wait, I'll give it a week. No, you can't do that. You need to get out and support it that week. That keeps it in the theaters, and that allows them to hopefully add theaters. Paul's Promise opens nationwide October 21st. Ryan O'Quinn, stay right there. I'm going to pray with you. But thanks. Hey, you tuning in. Are you still in Portugal? That's what I guess. Let's go. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. So remember Paul's Promise opening nationwide October 21st. Let's change the direction here, take a turn, and we'll go back to our good friend David Fisher from Landmark Capital, as we do every Monday. And in case you're newer to the show, you guys are like, what's the deal? Why do you talk about this stuff on a regular basis? The only reason that originally I even considered doing a financial focus on Monday, so we do a Monday update with David, but on the first Monday of the month, we do a full show. So the full first Monday of the month, we do a full show. We talk about all kinds of things going on with the markets and what's going on in banking internationally, nationally, what's going on with the Fed, what's going on with investments in general. David's specialty is in precious metals, and how do you incorporate those into an overall strategy as the opposite end of the teeter-totter, as I like to say. But the only reason I made it a regular part of the show is because talking about money and possessions is a regular part of the scriptures. It's all over the Old and the New Testament. So God knows that this is something that we struggle with at a heart level, at a management level, at a stewardship level. So if the Lord's going to be talking about it a lot, don't you think we should reflect that appropriately here on the show, which is why we do that on a regular basis. And it's such a blessing to always have David with us. How are you, my friend? Good to have you back.
I am doing good. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, as always. So our Money Monday update, we start in a great place. We go right to the scriptures, in this case, Psalm 127. So let's start there, and then we'll dive in.
It says, unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. Mm-hmm. So the scripture, unless the Lord builds this house, you know, what we're talking about simply, Steve, is the Lord doesn't have a set of hammer and nails, and he's not actually performing the construction, but he's at work within us. But it speaks of the Lord's direct involvement in our lives, obviously. The verse reveals, you know, that we need to seek God's blessing. We need to ask him for divine wisdom. We need to seek his face. You know, that's our action. So we're partnering in the building of this. But there's a scripture that relates to this. Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. So my advice is, you know, sometimes Christians, you know, do too much effort in pondering and thinking, what should I do for the Lord, instead of, my advice is start moving. Yeah. God can't move a parked car, you know, and believe that the Lord is greater than your plans for your life, and he's sovereign, he knows all, he sees all, and that's he'll direct you once you start moving on what the purpose is, you know, for your ministry, for your work, your who you witness to, and you know, becoming more like him, because you're engaged in saying, you know, I want to build this house, but I want you to give me the plans. But you gotta get engaged. You gotta get
moving.
That's
right. Yeah, and he'll use, you know, when your heart's right and your motivation's right, like 1 Corinthians 13, and checking everything against love. God can use whatever you're doing. But there are times for meditation. There are times to be still, obviously. But we need to be about the Father's business, and we can do that while we're about, quote-unquote, our own business, and that's why it's great to be a reminded of that. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. So if you're not working for the Lord, you're pretty much working in vain. So you got to remember that. The CPI number came out last Tuesday. That was kind of ugly, and it's still wreaking havoc on stocks. I'm looking at just the last month. And it started just a month ago. We were at the stock market. The Dow was at 33,706. Today, it's all, you know, it's up a little at the end of the day, but it's at 31,000. Barely got back above 31,000. So, like a 10% swing just in the last month. Janet Yellen's chiming in. And there's all kinds of stuff going on. So, what's happening overall? and what did Janet say? Because she's usually pretty good at stirring things up.
Yes. So I'm appalled that 47 out of 50 economists missed the CPI number. I mean, that's what they do for a living. They completely missed it. They predicted it would be 8.2% or 7.9%. It came in, you know, lower than what it was last month. It was 8.5% last month. It came in at 8.3%. But there seems to be this sentiment that, you know, through investors, economists, the public, the administration, you name it, that there's this belief, I want to just have the Fed go away, no more raising rates, get the markets back to normal, that we shouldn't have inflation, all those things. But we do have it, and we have to, you know, embrace the reality of this market, embrace the reality that there is inflation. Mm-hmm. And the Fed's going to meet this week, probably raise 2 days from now, three-quarters of a point, probably in December, a half of a point, and probably a quarter of a point in January. Before we get to Janet Yellen, CEO of FedEx, says he expects the economy to enter into a worldwide recession. He said that last week on Thursday. Boy, all the markets have been red. Today's the first green day since the CPI number came out. Yep. But Janet Yellen, she came out and said Sunday, she talked about inflation. She said she talked about the IRS. She talked about crypto, digital currencies. But in relationship to the inflation, she said the Fed's going to get it under control. So I'm confident in them, and we won't be in a recession. We aren't in one now. She also said that the G7 nations, we're referring to U.S., Japan, Canada, Germany, France, Italy, and the United Kingdom, and the Euroland, they're all coming together. They met last month, and they're going to put a cap, a price cap on oil, so that Russia stays in line. They don't make too much money, and we don't have inflation. So fear not. If the Fed isn't here, Janet Yellen is here. She's going to control oil. So just kind of a crazy all over the board verbiage we heard from her this weekend.
And then she talked about the now infamous adding 87,000 new IRS workers. So give us the highlights of that, because I remember when I first found out about this, within 24 hours or 48 hours, I'm like, how many billionaires are there in America? And there's like 800. And you go, okay, you don't need 87,000 IRS agents for that. What about multimillionaires? And there's a good number of those, but still, 87,000 is a big number. IRS agents, that's pretty intimidating. So what are the highlights of what's going on there?
Well, she spoke at the new IRS federal building in Carrollton. So she talked about the IRS. She confirmed President Biden's belief that they weren't going to target people making under $400,000. But I go with what you just said. I mean, billionaires, they have multiple millions of dollars to hire the top tax advisors. So do millionaires. But the person making $100,000 or $50,000 or $75,000, which that is the number that the Republican Party did a survey and said they're targeting a person that's making around $75,000 to $100,000. So Yellen was pushing back against that report. She also said, this is going to be a great improvement. We're going to feel the difference right away in next tax filing season. We're hiring 5,000 new IRS service agents to answer the phone. My question is, the 82 other 1,000 agents, where are they going?
Right.
That's the focus, and that's where they're signing up to be a field agent, which goes and knocks on your door. That's going after the money that they can get. So I say still beware that everything is not a bed of roses, especially when Janet Yellen says it's not what you think it is.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. And then they're still talking about the quote-unquote U.S. digital dollar, right?
Yeah, in fact, the White House, on the White House webpage, it says, Biden often summarizes his vision for America in one word, possibilities. A digital dollar may seem far-fetched, but modern technology could make it a real possibility. So Biden wants this thing to go through. The administration is getting closer, he said, in a digital currency. And Janet Yellen said at the IRS building, quote, right now some aspects of our current payment system are too slow and too expensive. Last time I bought groceries, in fact, ever since I bought groceries, I don't ever remembering it being too slow and ineffective and too costly. So it's listen to what they're saying, look past it. They talk about this is going to has greater access, greater economic growth. It's going to boost the economy. It's going to keep the dollar as a central global currency. My thought is this. If we're doing such a poor system of managing our money at $31 trillion of debt in just regular money that they can create out of thin air, paper money, and money that they do electronically,
right?
Having a digital dollar is not going to fix that. It's just going to even make things worse because it invades our privacy.
That's
and there was an executive order by Biden signed in March, order number 14067. That is moving aggressively towards unleashing this thing. They have I want to make it really clear. They haven't said that for sure they're going to do it, but they're sure done a lot of research on it, spent a lot of money on it. And there's 9 different government agencies now coming together with one big report. I got it right here in front of me, 58 pages. Haven't had the chance to read it. It's on the government website. I'm going to assume having a digital currency is not going to be too beneficial and probably might have some detrimental attributes to it.
Well, and you mentioned privacy. That'll be an issue. And then control is another issue. Do you want the federal government to literally have its hands on all of your currency? And the answer to that, of course, should be no, but that's exactly what they want because it's all about control. So how's gold and silver reacting to all this news?
Well, gold and silver is, again, caught in the back trap of the people sidetracking their money out of a bleeding market called stocks. The dollar goes up, so gold and silver goes down. But Luke Alexander and Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and a few other people I could quote, they're all saying now's the time to be getting some hard assets, gold and silver. They're undervalued. It's going to make some big moves.
Yeah, and that's what we keep hearing from people that are immensely successful and know what they're talking about, including you, David. If people want to get more information about that, they just want to get educated, what do?
They can call us the old-fashioned way. 877-448-2646, 877 888-448-2646 or go to landmarkgold.com.
Excellent. Thanks for again, as always, my friend. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, my brother.
All right, buddy. God bless you. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.